Hello and welcome to Southern Gospel Conversations. Take a few minutes to settle in and enjoy today's podcast. Here's your host, Southern Gospel fan, record collector, and radio contributor, Nicholas Wilkie.
Well, hello everybody and welcome to the Southern Gospel Conversations podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Wilkie, and today we have a really good singer and an even better encourager and friend with me on the show. His name is Brian Hudson. Brian, how are you, brother?
Nicholas, I'm doing well. How about yourself, my friend?
Man, I'm good. I'm glad to have you on. Looking forward to it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yes, sir. Hey, man, to get started, why don't you introduce yourself? Tell me who you are and maybe about your family and where you live and all that stuff.
Okay, well, my name is Brian Hudson, and I live around the Cincinnati, Ohio area, originally from Indiana. I've spent 33 years in full-time ministry with different groups through the years, so Heartland Quartet, Kingsman Quartet, two different tenures with the Kingsman, and now my wife and I live in the Cincinnati area, not far from where I was born and raised, and we have four grown children and three granddaughters, and we go out every weekend and sing, and I preach a little bit, and we do marriage conferences all over the country, and God's just been faithful to us, been good to us. And so, you know, I, on occasion, will still get to fill in with groups on occasion. I went out a few weeks ago with the Kingsman Quartet, filled in with them. I spent 10 years with those guys. And so I went out with them for a week. And I see I filled in with groups like the Blackwood Brothers a couple, three times. And even Poet Voices, Phil Cross and Poet Voices, I filled in with them, I don't know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago and sung tenor for them for a weekend. And had a good time with those guys. And so, yeah, God's just been good to us and been faithful to us. And so we're still out here plugging along and doing our best to win people to the Lord.
Yeah, man. That's awesome. What's going on with your ministry currently? Your ministry is called Rescue Me Ministries, right?
Right, right. Yeah, we really feel like that God brought my wife and I together to rescue each other. And ultimately, God rescued us. And so we have entitled our ministry Rescue Me Ministries. And like I said, we do about 150 ministry dates every single year. And currently we're just, when the tour dates come around and, sometimes we're at their marriage events. Sometimes they're singing and preaching for me. Sometimes it's just singing. And like this particular weekend, it's when we're recording this, it's Independence Day weekend, 4th of July weekend. And so we've got a couple of ministry dates Sunday, July the 5th. And so we're looking forward to in Pennsylvania, looking forward to going out there and ministering and song. And I don't think I'll be preaching, but I might be giving a little devotion each service. But yeah, that's kind of what we're doing right now. But wherever God opens the door, that's where we go.
Man, that's awesome. I didn't know you preached. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I've been preaching for about 7 or 8 years now. And I really enjoy it. In fact, there's times I enjoy it more than the singing part. So, God uses everybody's gifts and talents. And as long as we're willing to allow him to use us, he certainly will.
Yes. Very good. Well, you also do something with your buddy, Josh Griffin, known as the Behind the Crown podcast. Why don't you talk about that? Tell me how that got started and everything.
Well, Josh has been a longtime friend of mine. Gosh, I consider him and his family like extensions of my family. Him and his sister Jess have been going on the Singing at Sea cruise with us for several years. I met him years ago, and they live in South Georgia. And I'm not tech savvy at all, Nicholas. I'm just telling you that right now. I'm not tech savvy. And so Josh has been probably 2 years now just, hey, we need to do a Kingsman podcast. We need to do a Kingsman podcast. And, because long before I was ever a member of the Kingsman, I was a fan. And, I thought, well, man, I told Josh, I said, man, I'm not tech savvy at all. If something goes wrong, I'm not going to know how to fix it. I'm not going to know how to do anything. So he's basically held my hand and walked me through it. And now we have a weekly podcast. It's all over all the major podcasting streaming platforms, also on YouTube. And it's where we just go, we decided we wanted to, recognize the guys in the Kingsman. Past and present, that maybe recorded songs or, was just part of the Kingsman, but we want to know who they are, and their backstory. They dedicated so many years, a lot of those guys dedicated so many years to the Kingsman, and like I said, recorded a lot of great songs and rode the bus for, you know, days at a time. And I really feel like that we're doing a pretty good job of, you know, talking to every guy. And we've done tribute episodes to some of the guys that have passed, you know, Ernie Phillips and Squire Parsons, Jim Hamill, Eldridge Fox. We've done tribute episodes to those guys but we're really enjoying it, and we're getting a lot of positive feedback, and we normally record on Tuesday evenings, and you know, we just having a great time doing that. And I encourage people to search Behind the Crown podcast and catch up on all the episodes and hear a lot of funny stories, Nicholas. We hear funny stories from the road and things, you know, and stories behind some of the old Kingsman, iconic Kingsman songs, you know, hearing stories about, you know, where they found the song, you know, how they arranged the song. And so, you know, we're doing that, you know, that kind of thing. And like I said, in the meantime, telling some good road stories. But one thing we always do, we always have a piece of useless information, Nicholas. And of course, you know,
yes,
most guys have lots of useless information. Now, for me, it's the old Redback hymnal. I hope you know what I'm talking about.
I do.
But I know page numbers. I know some page numbers. That's just one random, you know, piece of useless information I have. You know, 52 is Jesus Hold My Hand. 57 is Amazing Grace. 333 is All Fly Away. You know, I know page numbers. And so for tonight, Nicholas, I figured I'd give us a piece of useless information if you're ready for it.
Man, I was going to ask you for a piece of useless information if you had one. Let's go. I'm pumped.
I do have one.
Let's go.
Okay, so a cow gives nearly 200,000 glasses of milk in a lifetime.
Wow.
I'm going to repeat that again. A cow gives nearly 200,000 glasses of milk in a lifetime. That is a piece of useless information. Like, you know, people say, well, okay, well, what does that mean? Well, it just gives you a piece of useless information. You may never need to know that, Nicholas, but you could pass that along sometime today, maybe in this week. You know, maybe when you're gathering with your friends and your family, maybe you're at work one day, you say, you know what? You know, a cow can give nearly 200,000 pieces of milk, glasses of milk in a lifetime. So there you go. So,
isn't that some? Now, I'm just wondering here, are we talking big glasses or little glasses?
Well, it doesn't really say, but I'm guessing a normal glass, you know.
Yeah.
And I've got three granddaughters, and I will say, with three granddaughters who love chocolate milk, I buy a lot of milk in my lifetime. My oldest granddaughter's 11 years old, and my youngest one is 7. So I guarantee I've bought a lot of jugs of milk, because when they come to Mimi and Poppy's house, and I'm Poppy, they love some chocolate milk. So I make sure I always got milk on hand.
Oh, yes. I love it. Yeah, I like chocolate milk, too. I'm a fan of that, for sure. Well, I put a post on Facebook saying that I'll be interviewing you and asked everyone if they had any questions for you. And your co-host on Behind the Crown podcast, Josh Griffin, he put a comment and said, does your back hurt from toting the load of being the star of Behind the Crown podcast?
Well, I saw where he put that on there. Now, listen, let me just tell you, Josh is toting the load on that when it comes to tech, for sure. Because, you know, he sends me the link to the Zoom studio, and I click on it, and I'm able to talk. And I think the reason he chose me, because I've got the gift of gab, Nicholas. And when you got a podcast, you know, you have to have the gift of gab, because sometimes we have interviewed some of the Kingsman guys, and I'm not going to say which ones, but there's some times that we'll ask a question, and they'll give us a one-word response.
Right.
And this one gentleman, I'm not going to say who it was, but this one guy we were interviewing, I was looking at my watch, and I'm thinking, okay, if we go through these questions as he's talking, we're going to be done in 15 minutes. I mean, we normally go about an hour. So I knew I was going to have to talk more. So I would, you know, interject, you know, stories about the question that was asked of the gentleman, and he just wasn't answering. So you got to be able to talk a little bit and stretch. You know, that's just like any MC or any person, you know, on the platform. Some things can happen, and you got to be able to go with it and fill the time. And so I've got the gift of gab, as my wife says. And so That's the only thing I'm toting on the podcast. Josh is doing the hard stuff. He's doing the legwork, and you know, it's a thrill to get to do that with him. And like I said, we've received so many positive comments from former Kingsman guys that we've interviewed, and you know, and fans and friends of and not just the Kingsman, but of gospel music. And we did a joint podcast not too long ago with Daniel Mount.
Right.
On Southern Gospel Journal, and that was a great thing. You know, we come together and we did a joint episode together. And so, you know, it's a lot of fun. And you know, we believe in gospel music. We believe in the message behind gospel music, and that's what we want to promote. We want to promote, yes, the legacy of the Kingsmen, but more than anything, we want to promote the gospel.
Yes, no doubt about it, brother. Gospel music is the greatest music in the world, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Yes, sir. Sure is. Well, Brian, let's go back many years ago now. Tell me how you became a fan of gospel music before you started singing, because I'm sure you probably became a fan of it before you started singing, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, my family group, I say it this way, on my dad's side of the family, they were from the Dayton, Tennessee, Chattanooga area, and most of those family members went to singing schools back in the 40s and the 50s and, you know, 30s, 40s and 50s. And so they could open up any songbook and read the shape notes and sing any song. So that was my dad's side. Well, my mom's side, and that was who I was closer to because that's where I grew up, was Southern Indiana. That's where my mom's side of the family were. And none of them could even read music. In fact, to this day, they can't read music. And so just hearing them, and they had a little local group that traveled Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, West Virginia, Ohio, those kind of places on the weekends. And they were a family group. They're called the Woods family. My mom's maiden name was Woods. And so I began playing the drums for them when I was 13. And so, you know, playing in church. And then on occasion, we would go out for a weekend. And here I am, 13, dragging these drums around. And, you know, I that's really what I wanted to do. Singing was never on the radar, Nicholas. It was always just wanting to play the drums. And so I would hear my family group sing these songs, and I assumed, since my family group sang them, that they belonged to them. So it was later in life that I would get around, when I got into gospel music full time, that I would hear those same songs my family group sang, and, well, that's a Woods family song. Well, that's a Woods family song. And come to find out, that song belonged to the Cathedrals or the Kingsmen or the Rambos or the Happy Goodmans. And so that's kind of how, yep, I got introduced through my family group. And then when I really saw my first quartet live was a little group that came from West Virginia to my home church, and they were a male quartet. They were called the New Covenant Quartet. Probably most people wouldn't know who they were, but they came, and that just lit a fire under me that I wanted to be in a quartet. I wanted to sing in a quartet.
I love it.
So that kind of started as I was like a 15-year-old kid wanting to sing in a quartet, wanting to play the drums too. And I did that for a while still, but that's kind of, and then when I first heard Chattanooga Live by the Kingsmen, 1977, man, that was, that really lit a fire under me. And I heard them, but I didn't get to see them live. I never saw that lineup, you know, Ernie Phillips and Jim Hamill you know, Squire Parsons and Ray Dean Reese was the vocal lineup on that album. I never got to see him live. But I heard him on record, and that was what cinched it for me pretty much. And then, you know, I later went to begin singing full time in 1993. And that was a dream come true to join a group called the Heartland Quartet, who traveled those guys and just started my full time ministry.
Yep. That's awesome, man. I love it. Now, you've already touched on this some, but I always ask this, so I'm going to ask you this, and I want you to go in a little bit more detail about it, your history in gospel music, all the groups you've been with and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, like I said, I traveled originally with a local group called the Woods Family, and then my brother and myself and my cousin formed a trio. We did Cathedral Quartet, Kingsman songs, Heaven Bound, Gold City. We were called the New Generation. We were based out of Indiana. We were the third generation of singers in our family, but we didn't want to be called the third generation, so we chose the New Generation. So we traveled that way about 9 years. And then I joined a group called the Heartland Quartet in 1993, and two former members of the Cathedrals, George Amon Webster and Roy Trimble, were singing, yep, baritone and singing tenor. And a young bass singer out of Kansas named Brent Fredericks was singing bass. And I joined them guys in 1993 and stayed with them until 1996. And their producer, their record producer, was Eldridge Fox of the Kingsmen.
Wow.
And one night at a concert, he told me, he said, it was 1995, March of 95. And he said, if I ever need a lead singer, I'm going to call you. And so a year later, just about a year later, maybe 14 months later, he called me and said that Tim Surratt was leaving the Kingsmen, that Jim Hamill was retiring, and they wanted me to come to Asheville and audition. And I drove to Asheville. 2 weeks later, they were on a West Coast trip. They weren't going to be home for 2 weeks. So I drove to Asheville, my brother and myself, we drove to Asheville and I auditioned, and they offered me the job. And so I stayed 5 years with the Kingsmen, and then come off the road in 2001, became a worship pastor in West Virginia, Dynamic Church in West Virginia. And then 2005, I left the church and went back on the road with the Blackwood Gospel Quartet. Mark Blackwood hired me to sing lead, and I went back on the road in 2005 and then rejoined the Kingsmen in 2007. I tell people, Nicholas, if you die, you can't go back to the Kingsmen. If you're still alive, you might could go back. So
right.
I rejoined the Kingsmen in 2007, and then I left at the end of 2011, December of 2011, I left the Kingsmen and joined Sold Out Quartet and traveled with those guys about 5 years. And then in 2016, my wife and I, we began doing our own ministry and traveling a much easier schedule. But we go out and we like I said earlier, we minister in song. I preach. I did two revivals back in March, preached two revivals and had a wonderful time. But we do a lot of marriage events, and we call them marriage enrichment events. All over the country, and just where, you know, we go on the Singing at Sea cruise every year. We host, we're one of the hosts on the Singing at Sea. And so we MC on there. We host a newlywed game. We take about, I don't know, maybe 30 people with us every year. And so just some friends that go with us, and we just have a big time. And then my schedule allows me on occasion, like I said earlier, to fill in with quartets on occasion. Yvonne tells me that the quartets call me because I know the old songs. And I said, well, you know, that helps to have some useless information of lyrics in your mind that, you know, groups can say, hey, I bet Hudson can fill in. He knows these songs. You know, he can jump in here. So
that's great. I love it. No doubt. Hey, how's your wife doing, man? You can share as little information or as much information as you want, but I'm just curious, how's your wife doing these
days?
Well,
her underlying issue, Nicholas, is lupus. She's had lupus about 26 years. And so best way I know to describe it, she started having issues with her back in 2019. And she's come to find out she has no cartilage between her fourth and fifth vertebrae in her back due to lupus. So she began some spinal shots in her, you know, shots in her spine for that. And then when COVID hit the world in 2020, she had COVID for 9 straight weeks. And so with her lupus being a big factor in that, it did a lot of damage to her heart and lungs. And so over the last since 2020, she's had two major surgeries. She's been diagnosed with POTS syndrome. It has to do with the heart, with low blood pressure. So she's had a host of issues with because of lupus and her damage because of COVID. And so it's been 2 years since she's been ministered with me anywhere. But my prayer is that she is able to go to every one of our ministry dates, and that's the prayer. So we just kind of take it day by day and praying that God will heal her. And so I would appreciate everyone's prayers. If they run out of things to pray for, and we never should, I pray that they would remember Yvonne in your prayers, that God would touch her body and heal her.
Absolutely. No doubt. Thanks for sharing that, buddy.
You're welcome.
Well, you've been on the road for many years singing. So with that being said, I know there's been a lot of funny stuff that has happened on the road. Why don't you share a funny road story you can think of? Anything.
Well, I was talking about George Amon Webster a minute ago, and when I first joined Heartland, I'll put it this way: most MCs that you hear that, you know, are calling a program with a group, most of the jokes they hear have been passed down and passed down and passed down. So most of the jokes that George Amon Webster told since he was with the Cathedrals for nearly 10 years came from George Yonts, okay, of the Cathedrals, you know, the great bass singer, and he was one of the greatest MCs of all time. Well, George Amon Webster would tell this story on occasion, you know, when there was a lull in the program or just needed a laugh. He would tell about his daughter. He said, I remember the time my daughter was outside and it was snow and it was so cold. We lived up in Stowe, Ohio. I was a member of the Cathedrals at the time. And he said, we found this old fat cat. And his daughter, you know, in the joke, he would say, she looked up at me and she said, Daddy, let's keep it. Oh, no, baby, we can't keep this cat. We don't know who it belongs to. Oh, Daddy, if we don't keep this cat, if we don't keep it, it's gonna freeze to death out there in that snow. So he lay it on thick, you know. He said, so we took the cat inside, and you know, and everybody's just hanging on to this story. And we took the cat inside and we took it downstairs and got a little pan of milk and put a little rug for it to lay on. And it was a fat cat, it's a big old cat. And he said, and part of the joke every night, Nicholas, was he'd say, and during the night, the cat had kittens. Okay. He said, we didn't know that. All we knew the next morning, he said, I heard my little girl get up and she ran down the stairs and she went down to go check on her cat. And she'd get to the bottom of the stairs and she said, Daddy, Daddy, come here and look. And he said, what is it, baby? He said, this cat's fell all to pieces. You know, everybody just laughs. Well, this one particular night, he's telling this story. And he gets to the part where he is supposed to say, Nicholas, he's supposed to say the cat had kittens. Yeah. Well, he forgot to say the cat had kittens. Okay. So he says that his little girl runs down the stairs and says, Daddy, Daddy, come here and look. This cat's fell all to pieces. And the people are just staring at us because they don't know that the cat had kittens because he left that part out. And he looks at me and he looks at the rest of the guys because they're not laughing. They're just sitting there looking at us. Everybody in the audience is looking at us. And he says, they're not laughing. I said, because you forgot to tell the part about the cat had kittens, you know. So,
yeah.
And then one night, you know, he was telling the same story and got to the end of it where he says, Daddy, Daddy, come here and look. The cats fell all to pieces. And he said, Daddy, Daddy, come here and look. The cats had kittens. And that wasn't funny either. So it's like two separate times he just totally messed the joke up. But I was thinking today, I think that was I'm not going to say I've not done anything like that because I certainly have messed things up when I was emceeing for the Kingsmen. I was trying to say certain things and it come out wrong. And I was like, oh, no, did they really just say that, you know? So anyway, things like that happen for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That kind of thing is funny, but also I think that may have been embarrassing for George Amon as well.
Oh, it was. Yeah. The funny part about to us, he didn't know why they weren't laughing because that was a joke that always worked, you know. And when he looked at us and said, they're not laughing, that's when we wanted to bust out because we couldn't just look at him and say, George, you left that part out about the cat having kittens. You left that part out. We just couldn't say it right there on the stage. So it was quite comical.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Well, I know there's been a lot of funny stuff that has happened, but also I know there's been a lot of touching times where maybe the Lord used you to minister to somebody at the product table or the altar or anything like that. Do you have a story like that you can share?
Well, yes and no. When I was a worship pastor, I told you a moment ago that I left the road in 2001, became a worship pastor in West Virginia. And, you know, I was leading the music. We had a praise team and a praise band, and I remember one particular Sunday morning, one of our singers on our praise team, we'd always meet like 7 o'clock in the morning, and we would do the run through of all the songs we were going to do for the church service. And we would always have prayer, and then we would take communion together before every service on Sunday. And this one sweet girl that sang on the praise team, I was taking prayer requests that morning, and she said, my mom and dad are coming this morning. And she said, because I'm singing a special. And she said, I don't know if they believe in anything. She said, I don't know that they've ever been in church that I know of. Or she said, if they have, I can't remember. So we had special prayer for her. And we actually prayed for her mom and dad. And so they came. And of course, we were running we were a small building, but God had grown the church. We were doing three services on a Sunday morning because we had that many people coming, and our sanctuary only seated so many people. And so they came for the first service, early service, and they stayed for both, you know, all three services because their daughter was singing a special, you know. And then they came the next Sunday, and they came the next Sunday, and they came, I think, four more Sundays in a row. And I think maybe the sixth or seventh Sunday that they were actually there, they came forward and they surrendered their life to Christ. And then I baptized them a week later. And then 6 months after that, Nicholas, they were both serving in the children's ministry in the church. And wow. To me, you know, and I didn't do anything special. You know, it wasn't anything that I'd done, but God allowed me to see that where, you know, I saw them the first morning. I met them that first morning. And then here 6 months later, after they, you know, after they gave their life to Jesus, they're both serving in the kids ministry, you know, and they were in their late 60s. And they'd get down on the floor and play with them kids. And it was just amazing to see, you know, the power of the gospel displayed right there in front of me, how God can radically change somebody's life. And it was just a blessing.
Man, that is a blessing. That's awesome. No doubt. I love it. Now, here's another Facebook question, and this one was also submitted by Josh Griffin. He wants you to tell about when you pitched When God Ran to the Kingsmen to record.
Yeah, it was about 2008. I had heard that song. I had heard that song from Phillips, Craig, and Dean. They were a contemporary group. And when I first went back to the Kingsmen in 2007, we had a tenor change not long after I had got there, had rejoined. And so the record company wanted us to wait for a little while so we got settled before we started looking for songs for a new album. And I just loved the song When God Ran. It was a story of my life. You know, I had made a lot of bad decisions, and that was and totally by my own choosing, I became the prodigal and just like the story of the prodigal son from Luke 15. And right. That song was ministering to me through Phillips, Craig, and Dean. And so we were looking for songs for a new Kingsmen album. And I said, I would like to submit this song. Well, Kingsmen didn't like it. They heard the real contemporary version. And when I pitched it to Crossroads Entertainment, that's who was doing the Kingsmen albums then, they didn't like it necessarily. And I made a joke about it. I said, if we don't record this song, I'm going to quit. No, but I just really felt strong. I felt like, and I'd reached out to the writer, Nicholas, a gentleman named Benny Hester wrote it back in 1987. And I found him on Facebook, and I messaged him and told him that, you know, I really wanted to record this song. And he said he wrote it for people who at one time had a relationship with Jesus or went to church. And they got away from God, and they felt like that God would not let them come home because of their choices. And I said, man, I said, if you didn't write it for anybody, you wrote it for me. If you didn't write it for anybody else, you wrote it for me. And so I submitted it to the Kingsmen, and we submitted it to record company. And I just said, you know, if you'll give this song a chance, because I believe there's a lot of prodigals out there who in their heart, they're a long way from God, and they know the relationship they once had with him. And they feel like that God won't let them come home, that God won't forgive them. But I, you know, I just said, if you'll give the song a chance, I think it will reach people. And I'm so glad that they agreed on the song. And I've told this before, but we were in the studio cutting the vocals for it. And my wife was in the control room where all the engineer was and the producer and all the guys that were not singing. They were in there, and she said all the guys were saying, you know, this is going to be the title of the album. They're going to call the album that. This is going to be the first song off the album, you know, the first single off the album. But it's really ministered a lot of people. I've had so many people, and here it is. You know, I recorded it in 2008. I think it was nominated for Song of the Year in 2009. And all these years later, Nicholas, I'm still singing the song. I'm still God's still using the song. And not because I sing it, but it's just a great song because we serve a God that loves us. And when we come back to him, the great thing about the way God loves is he treats us like we never left. He treats us like a son or a daughter. not like a slave. You know, God doesn't bring back our past against us. You know, if somebody messes up and they repent and they ask God to forgive them, if somebody brings that up, it's not God that ever does that. God doesn't do that. Unfortunately we have the enemy and we have people that sometimes want to bring up our past to us. And that's never of God when they bring up our past. God doesn't bring our past up against us. You know, he loves us. He forgives us. Now he makes us pay consequences. And I make sure I say that God does forgive, but he makes us pay consequences for our actions. And some of those consequences are not very nice. And sometimes they're hard and sometimes they're difficult. But you know what? If we didn't have to pay consequences, we would keep doing the same dumb things over and over and over again. So he makes us pay consequences because he loves us. You know, he loves us. He wants us to come back to him and ask for forgiveness so he can, we can fix that relationship with him again.
Right. That's great stuff, buddy. And, it's good to hear that you're still singing that song, because I was talking to a friend last night, telling him that I'd be interviewing you, and he was wondering himself if you still sing the song. So that's awesome.
Still sing it. Yeah.
Very good. I love it. Now here's kind of a funny thing right here. This is also a Facebook question.
Okay.
Somebody wants you to talk about your relationship with Alan Cox and how did y'all become such good friends. Hey, let me ask you this. Are y'all good friends at all? Or friends at all?
We are.
I'm kidding.
We absolutely. And now listen, we pick on each other relentlessly. He picks on me.
Right.
I pick on him. And we actually had a few people. I had one lady. I don't even remember her name, so I can go ahead and tell the story because I don't remember her name. But she messaged me on Facebook and said, "I'm pretty sure you and Mr. Cox are Christians, but you need to be very careful on how you say what you say to him." And I almost responded, and my wife said, "Don't even respond." But I was in Michigan a few weeks ago, and Alan came and we went out to eat, and he went to the concert and sat there and made faces at me the whole night, I met Alan years ago back when he was with the Florida Boys, I was with the Kingsmen, and we did a lot of dates together. We would go out and, you know, do that West Coast convention together. And, you know, five or six of the regular quartets or groups would go out. The Hoppers and the Florida Boys, Kingsmen, Melody Boys, Dixie Melody Boys, maybe one or two more, you know. And so we would spend a week or, you know, 4 or 5 days at this convention. It was like a West Coast convention, like the quartet convention. And then we'd go to Canada once a year. And the same groups would go to Canada. And they always have, so we would have a lot of downtime. And so, you know, Alan and I, we just struck up a friendship years ago. And so he'd come off the road. I'd come off the road. You know, I was a worship pastor and he was working for Verizon. And we kind of struck up our friendship again a few years ago. And so for Facebook, we just pick on each other relentlessly. You know, it's nothing mean. Of course, he is mean. I'm telling you that he is so mean. But we banter back and forth with each other because, you know, Nicholas, here's the thing. Here's the way we look at Al and I look at Facebook. There is so much negativity every single day on Facebook. I mean, there's people and there's Facebook pages dedicated to tearing other Christians down. I think those get on my nerves and worse than anything, you know. And there'll be a whole Facebook page dedicated to tearing this pastor down or tearing this pastor down or tearing this church down or tearing this denomination down. There's so much negativity all over Facebook. We do our best to keep things light and lighthearted. And that's kind of how we just show our friendship. You know, we're constantly bantering each other. And in fact, I've called him twice this week just to talk. You know, we're friends but some people take it way too serious and they really think that that we pick on each other. And of course, now he is mean. Like I told you, he's mean. You know, he pushes little ducks off in the water when they're trying to learn how to swim. That shows you how mean he is, Nicholas. You can't trust him.
Well, he would say the same thing about you, Brian. So there you go.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely he would. Absolutely he would.
Oh, yeah. And whenever I asked you earlier if y'all were really friends, I was just kidding because of how y'all picking each other relentlessly on Facebook.
Oh, I know. Yeah, we're constantly going back and forth with each other, and you know, like I said, and here's the thing, and you know, Nicholas, there's people that don't have a sense of humor, or there's people who don't ever post anything on your page unless they want to start an argument. You know, there's a gentleman out of Pennsylvania, and I doubt he'll listen to this, but you know, he's a pastor, he's an assistant pastor at his church, and the only time he ever posts on our ministry page is when he wants to start an argument with me over some scripture that he interprets a little different than me. And I thought, you know, life's too short for that, Nicholas. You know, life's too short. Should we stand up for the word of God? Absolutely. Should we defend our beliefs? Yes. But man, there's a way to do that. There's a way to win people. And I'm a firm believer in fight and argument is not a way to win people. I just feel That's like true. That our lost friends and people that we know that are lost, if they're looking on our social media platforms and all they see us is arguing with other Christians, my thought is why would I ever want to become a Christian? If all you guys do is fight and argue and pull each other down, why would I want to ever become part of that? So I just, right. We just don't do drama. And like I said, me and Alan, we keep it lighthearted and we pick on each other. And somebody asked me the other day, they said, are you ever going to stop picking on Alan? I said, probably not. So I know he'd say the same thing. So.
Right. Well, you'll stop picking on him whenever the Lord calls you home. But until then, no.
Well, I tell you what, when I get to the pearly gates, I'm going to try to prank him when he's coming through.
that's a good idea.
That's a good idea. Say, now, Lord, you know, St. Peter, can I have a little bit of freedom here to prank this guy as he's coming in the gate here? So,
yeah, I love it. Well, here's another Facebook question. And speaking of lighthearted, this is lighthearted as well. It's from Evan Bradford. And he says, what is your favorite Evan Bradford experience? And then he put under that question, he said, never mind, you'll never be able to air this episode.
Well, Evan is a good, he's a fine young man. He really is a fine young guy. I got to meet him really first time when we interviewed him on the Behind the Crown podcast. You know, he created this documentary called Then and Now. It was a documentary about the Kingsmen. And so far, yes. There's been two segments of it. And so that's kind of how I met him. And then when I filled him with the Kingsmen a few weeks ago during the Memphis Quartet show, and we did Seminole, Oklahoma and a week in Texas, Evan was playing the bass and riding the bus. And so I got to meet him a little bit. Of course, he's a very young man. I got socks older than him, Nicholas. And I know right now I've got the socks older than him. I got them on right now. So
you got them on?
I got them on right now. So he's 21 years old, you know, I mean, so, but yeah, I know what story he's referring to, and he's right. I can't tell that on the podcast. I can't tell that tonight on the interview, but he is a fine young man and a historian of the Kingsmen. And that's what I like. It thrills me to know that there are young people out there who have a passion for this music and a passion for the gospel, not just the music, but the gospel. And, you know, how can we use our gifts and talents through music to win people to the Lord or inspire people, you know? And so I think the world of Evan and of course, you know, the Kingsmen are going to be using him on the 70th anniversary tour that they're doing. They're doing select dates in 2026, and they'll be using Evan for that to play bass. They're taking a band on some select dates. So I encourage the fans to get on KingsmanQuartet.com and check and see when those dates are going to be. But Evan will be playing bass, and he's a little crazy. He's a little crazy, but he's a Kingsman fan, an Elvis fan, so you can't help but like the kid.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love Evan a lot. I love Evan's upbeat, positive personality.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's an upbeat, positive young man.
And he can eat pretty good too. He can stand right up there to me when it comes to eating. So I watch that young man eat, and so he's a full time eater just like myself.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Well, tell me, who are a few of your lead or baritone, either way, singing influences, and some of your favorites of all time? Because I know you've sung lead and baritone throughout your career. So either way there.
Well, probably my biggest influence early on, of course, I was a child of the 80s, and that tells you how old I am, Nicholas. Back in the 80s, the singer that every young lead singer wanted to sound like was either Ivan Parker or Michael English. Mike was back with the Singing Americans then. That's when he was just Mike and not Michael. And so that basically every lead singer that was, under the age of 30 wanted to sound like Michael or Ivan Parker. So those guys were big influences on me. Of course, Jim Hamill was too. Not only Jim Hamill was an incredible MC for the Kingsmen, but he was just a great lead singer. And of course, Jay Kess was an influence. Tim Surratt was an influence, former the Kingsmen. And I ended up taking his place. But I was never really I was a baritone when I went back in 2007, but I felt like I was a lead singer singing baritone. And then I felt like Philip Hughes, who when I came back, I felt like Philip Hughes was a tenor that was singing lead. And I felt like Harold was just trying to hold on for dear life. I mean, he was giving all he had every night. So I sang the baritone part for about 2 years, before Phil left, and I went back to the lead position. But I didn't consider myself a baritone singer. I mean, I sang the part, but I didn't really consider myself a baritone singer. Some of those singers influenced me. Of course, I was a big Elvis Presley fan. Still an Elvis Presley fan. Jack Tony of the Statesman Quartet was one of my big influences. And I tell young singers, it's okay to, if you hear a particular voice you like, or maybe one more than one voice, take a little bit of that voice, a little bit of this voice, a little bit, and then it's okay to make it your own. Find your voice. Don't, if your voice is not geared to sound like Jason Crabb, if you go out and you try to sing like Jason Crabb, you'll kill your voice. You'll destroy your voice. So you have to find out what you can sing comfortably, your range, and then try to stay within your range whenever you sing. And so I took a little bit of Jim Hamill, a little bit of Mike English, a little bit of Tim Surratt, a little bit of Jack Tony, a little bit of Ivan. And then I kind of formed my own voice and found my own voice, my own quartet voice. And so that's what I tell singers, find somebody you like, take a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and make your own. Because my dad told me when I was trying to sound like Michael English when I was 17 years old, he said, "There's already a Michael English. Be Brian Hudson."
Right.
So it was a great piece of advice. I didn't try to sound, I didn't, I mean, I liked their voices, but I didn't try to sound exactly like them. I tried to make my own voice.
Oh yeah. And you do, you might've taken some influence from several different guys, but at the same time, you sound like Brian Hudson. So,
well, thank you. I hope that's a good thing, Nicholas.
No, it is a good thing.
Okay.
So, but hey, who's your favorite gospel group of all time? Would you say?
Well, it'd have to be the Kingsmen.
Yeah,
I mean, my favorite gospel group of all time would have to be the Kingsmen. Of course, I have a wide variety. I mean, I like everything from the Imperials to the Kingsmen. I was a big Blackwood Brothers fan back when Pat Hoffmaster was singing tenor for the Blackwood Brothers. A wide variety. I mean, I listen to everything from Michael Bublé to some country, I like vocal groups. I still like the Oak Ridge Boys. So have a wide, I'm a harmony guy. So I like the harmony, if I like Eagles, Eagles, great harmony. And so, Jordan Ayers, sang back up in the Stamps. I mean, you name it. I could go on all night talking about harmony groups that I like.
Oh yeah. How about your favorite era of gospel music? What do you say there?
Well, you know what? It would have to be, even though I sang, I've been singing since 93, I would have to say for me, the golden era is 83 to probably 93. It seemed like the Cathedrals and Gold City and the Kingsmen were the top three groups back then. And man, they were putting out so many great songs. And it was during that time that, it was Ernie Phillips and Gary Shepherd and Chris Collins of the Kingsmen and Kirk Talley and Danny Funderburk. And then, of course, Ernie came along of the Cathedrals in Gold City. I feel like Gold City back when, the Pillars of Faith album, and those albums were, you know, moving up when they introduced Midnight Cry. It just seemed like, yep, man, it was just so many great songs, and songs that are now considered classics came out during the 83 through 93. So I really feel like, to me, that was, now you ask somebody else, I'm sure they're going to say a different era, and that's fine. But to me, that was my favorite era of gospel music.
Very good. I like it. 83 to 93. That's pretty specific. I like it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yep. Here's something cool about me. I'm only 24 years old. You probably have some socks. 24 years old, don't you?
I do. I do, Nicholas. I guarantee I do.
But my favorite era of gospel music is like the 1940s, like the mid 60s. So like we're talking, oh, wow, Statesman, Blackwood Brothers, the Goss Brothers, and even before that with the Harmoniers and the Homeland Harmony Quartet, the Sunshine Boys, stuff like that. That's my favorite era. So,
wow,
that's a cool fact. That's a cool fact about me.
Most guys your age, Nicholas, would have no clue the groups you just mentioned. You know,
well, I love
them. No clue.
Yeah. Well, that's I think God made me unique in that way. So,
oh, he did. He certainly did. He certainly did.
Yeah.
Well, and that's, and I've even told singers, young singers who are coming up, I say, you know what? Learn as much history as you can about gospel music. Now, you don't have to know every single person name that ran through every quartet or every group, but it helps to know history. It helps to know history. It helps to know certain songs. There are certain songs, like I've told hundreds of singers and musicians, there are certain songs in gospel music. If you're going to sing this for a livelihood, there are certain songs you need to know, because yeah, at some point during your career, you're going to be asked to do this song or that song, and you're going to be expected to know it. These old timers like me, they're going to expect you to know these songs. Nicholas, you wouldn't believe how many lead singers that I've had to feed the words to How Great Thou Art, because they didn't know How Great Thou Art.
Oh, wow.
I mean, and, you know, songs like Sweet Beulah Land, The Glory Road, songs like that. He Touched Me. You need to be able to know those songs, because at some point, like if you're in a quartet and there's another quartet on the program, you're going to be on stage with another group, and they're going to call songs that everybody should know. And you better know as many old songs as you can, because they're going to put you on the spot. And if you're a lead singer, especially, you're going to be expected to know this song or that song, and you better know it good enough to get through it. Now, you don't have, you know, you may not know all the words, but you need to know it good enough to get through it. You know, if you're a tenor. If you're a tenor, you better know The Glory Road that the Kingsmen recorded back in 73, because yeah, you're going to be singing that at some point. If you're a tenor singer, you're going to be expected to sing that at some point during your career.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And maybe another example of that would be if a quartet is on the program, there might be a good chance that you may sing Just a Little Talk with Jesus, something like that.
Absolutely. Just a Little Talk with Jesus. Yes. That. Yeah. And especially if you're a bass singer, you're going to have
right
to at some point sing that song with another bass singer. And you better know it enough you can get through it, you know.
Right.
Of course. Now, of course, something funny that Ray Dean Reese used to do with the Kingsmen. If we were singing on a program and we would do How Great Thou Art, if they didn't know the first verse, and normally it was the bass singers would do the first verse, then we do a chorus, and then the lead singers would split up the second verse. If the young bass singer didn't know the first verse to How Great Thou Art, Ray Dean Reese would purposely give them the wrong words. And
I figured that's what you were going to say.
I'd say, cousin, don't do that. Yeah, don't do that. They're nervous enough up here with the legend Ray Reese standing next to him. They're probably scared to death, you know. So he would first purposely give them the wrong word. So
that, yeah,
but it was all in fun.
Oh yeah, I love it. Well, here's something fun I'd like to do. I would like you to put together a made up quartet. So obviously this quartet you couldn't hear because they're made up. But who do you think would just be the members of just a great made up quartet you would love to hear? Even though you can't,
I would love
made
to
up.
Not me not singing with them, right? But just hearing them, right?
Usually I would be thinking you not singing with them, but you can sing with them if you want.
Okay. Well, for one, I would love to hear, and these guys have all passed. I would have loved to heard Pat Hoffmaster on tenor.
Yep.
Jack Tony on lead, Squire Parsons on baritone, and George Yount singing bass.
Man, that would have been a quartet right there.
That would have been a killer group. And if I could pick a group to sing with, guys to sing with, I would have to say Ernie Phillips on tenor, me singing lead. I would have to go with Squire Parsons again singing baritone, and Ray Dean Reese singing bass.
Yeah,
I would have loved, and that was the Chattanooga bunch, taking Hamill out of the mix and putting me in. That would have been an absolute bucket list for me to sing with those fellows. That would have been awesome.
Oh yeah, yep. All right, so for the first group, we have Pat Hoffmaster, Jack Tony, and then Squire Parsons. Is that right? And then George.
Yep, Squire, and then George Johns.
Okay, put a piano player with that group.
I'm going to go somebody you're probably not going to, you might know, but most people wouldn't probably guess. I would put Jonathan Sawery there.
Oh, yeah.
Most people, Jonathan sang lead and played piano for the Melody Boys for years.
Yes.
And probably one of the most underrated piano players that I've ever heard in my life. He wasn't flashy like Anthony Berger, and most people would choose Berger. And Berger was incredibly talented. I'm not taking anything away from his talent, but if I was going to just get a quartet piano player to sit and play, it would have to be Jonathan Sawery. And if Jonathan couldn't do it, then I would get Eric Aulis, that used to be with the Dixie Melody Boys years ago.
Cool.
I've seen Eric sit down and somebody starts singing and they don't even start in the right key, and he finds what key they're in. And I've yet to see a song that he can't play. And so if Jonathan couldn't do it, I'd pick Eric Aulis.
Excellent. Then your other group was there. It was Ernie Phillips, you, Squire Parsons, and Ray. Put a piano player with them.
Nick Bruno.
Very good. Love it.
Yeah.
No doubt. Here's something else fun I like to do. If you could sit at a table and chat with any gospel music personality that you never got the chance to meet, who would it be, and what would the conversation be about?
Wow. Gosh. Well, you know, I've been very blessed. I came in at a time when some of the legends were still alive, and so I got to meet most of my heroes. Gosh. Well, I got to meet JD, and I got on his bus a couple times, but I didn't really have any conversation with just me and him. I would have loved to sit down with JD and talk about his Elvis days. That would be so cool to me to, you know, have a few minutes with JD. You know, like I said, I got on his bus one time, and then a couple other times he'd be sitting backstage, and I'd kind of just, me and a couple other guys would ask him a couple questions, and he would respond, but there wasn't any conversation with just me and him. I would love to do some, you know, to ask him about the Elvis years.
Oh yeah. That's great stuff. Here's something else fun I'd like to do. I would like you to list 5 gospel music albums that you would have someone listen to if you were going to introduce someone to gospel music that's never heard it so they could get a good taste of it. And if you can't think of specific albums, think of just 5 groups you'd give somebody an album of.
Okay. I would go, number 1, Chattanooga Live. And then I would go, number 2, I would have to go Live Naturally, also a Kingsman album. And then number 3, I would go with Pillars of Faith by Gold City. Number 4, I would go, Live and Alive by the Singing Americans.
Yes.
That's when Mike English introduced Battle My Knees and Crowd Holy. And then for the 5th one, I would probably go with Symphony of Praise by Cathedrals.
Man, that's a list full of classics right there.
Oh, love it, man.
I love it. Well, brother, I have 2 more things for you, all right?
Sure.
The first one is called the Fast 5. What this is just 5 simple questions that you can just answer just a simple answer to. What is your favorite food?
Mexican.
How about your favorite dessert?
Big red cake.
Very good. Like a velvet cake?
Yes.
Red velvet. How about your favorite TV show?
The Andy Griffith Show.
Mine too. How about your favorite vacation spot?
Banff, Alberta, Canada.
Cool. Very neat. That's kind of an odd one. I like it. And last but not least, how about your favorite Bible verse and tell me why it's your favorite?
2 Corinthians 5:17 says, former things have passed away, behold, all things are new. I love it that when we surrender our life to Christ, that verse speaks to me that says, when we surrender our life to Him, that our former life, the former sins, the former way we used to live is gone, and He makes all things new.
Yes, sir. Great, great verse. Love it. My last question for you is this, Brian. If you were leaving Earth tomorrow, what do you think would be the last song that you would sing for the world? The entire world could hear
you. Wow. And it's funny you say that because it's a song I have never recorded. I'm thinking about 78 albums I've recorded total.
Wow.
In my lifetime. And I've never recorded the song. It's Sheltered in the Arms of God by Dottie Rambo.
Great song.
I've always loved that song. It was one of the very first songs that I ever learned to sing. When my brother and myself, my cousin began singing, we never recorded it. And all the groups, all the quartets I've been with, I've never recorded the song. And one of these days, I promise I'm going to record it. But that's, somebody would ever hold a gun in my head and said, what's your favorite song? That's my favorite song.
Well, very good. I love it. And brother, I thoroughly enjoyed doing this with you, man. I appreciate you doing it.
Well, you're welcome, Nicholas. Anything I can do to help you. And I will say for folks that, are interested, rescuemeministries.com. That's all one word. Rescuemeministries.com is our website. And of course, yes, we have Facebook, social media, and people can get on there. And maybe they'd like to schedule us sometime down the road. But we also do Behind the Crown podcast. You can search that on all the major podcast streaming platforms, also YouTube. And you can check that out. And I'd appreciate all that support. But, man, it's been a pleasure talking to you. And anything I can do in the future to help you, you please let me know.
Man, I appreciate it. You have a great night. All right. Love you, buddy.
All right, Nicholas. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Southern Gospel Conversations podcast. We hope you enjoyed it, and please be sure to share it with everyone you know. Tune in 2 weeks from today for another episode of the Southern Gospel Conversations podcast.